Hey, this is Chris Burns. Every week we go beyond the show to give you extended interviews, answer your questions, or even just dig deeper into a topic. Hey, if you're not getting our update, by the way, every day, just jump on dynamicmoney.com. You can get that update straight to your inbox, know exactly what's going on, but enjoy this episode of Beyond the Show.
Do you have a person in your life, and my guess is it's probably a young person, who constantly talks about the evils of capitalism? And you don't quite get it, because to you, capitalism has been this method of success. It's been the way that you've achieved wealth over time. It's what you were brought up to believe in. It's what wars were fought to maintain. And suddenly you see, this isn't a new thing, but a prevalent culture of capitalism is evil, and it's kind of linked to this idea of billionaires are evil. And what do you do with that? Well, there's a great article in the Wall Street Journal. One of my writing heroes is a guy named Jason Zweig. I'm probably say his name wrong. We've never hung out, but he writes for the Wall Street Journal, and in his latest column, he says, "Why invest a 22-year-old's tough questions about capitalism?" And I love this because this is true to my life. I have friends and people that I love who are in their 20s, and I will regularly see them post on Twitter or in conversation, and they will almost nonchalantly speak about the evils of capitalism. And I think it's something that we have to talk about. Because what you don't want to do here is simply dismiss out of hand what's being said. You don't want to just simply say, well, that's just stupid, and you're young and idealistic, and you'll grow old and jaded at some point, and then you'll love capitalism. That's not the answer, because there are helpful and real critiques of our system that need to be given. And it's not just young people, obviously. We have folks running for president right now who strongly object to tenets, kind of core tenets of capitalism. And so this is not just something for folks in their 20s and 30s. This could be something for folks in their 60s and 70s. That's fine. And yet I think as adults, it's easy to, when you disagree with someone younger than you, simply just throw it off and say, you know what? Whatever you're saying has no merit, doesn't live up to my experience, just wait a few years, you'll grow out of it. And that's not really a helpful answer. What I love about this article is it's something you can refer to where the questions that are given are being taken seriously. And in fact, Jason doesn't actually answer all the questions. What he does is, I'll give you the context here, he reaches out to someone he respects. A guy named, I'm going to find the name here, Lawrence Siegel. Lawrence is a very well-known intellectual, specifically around the area of finance. He heads what's called the CFA Institute Research Foundation. He's one of the directors there, which is, again, just a well-known kind of research institution around finance. And so he actually sends the questions. He says to this young lady that talks to him about her concerns about capitalism, and he says, well, how about you write me some questions? And he sends them to Lawrence, and Lawrence gives his authentic responses. And I think it's what I love about this is, it doesn't dismiss out of hand the questions. In fact, it honors the fact that questions are being asked. And I think it's so easy for us as adults to simply dismiss. And that does us no good. If we desire that this idea, that this concept of capitalism continue, and this idea of free markets and what it looks like to, you know, the good that capitalism can bring, if we want to spread that to people that are younger than us, we can't simply dismiss when they argue about it. I'll never forget, I went to a political rally when I was 18. And I think a 17-year-old got up and asked a question. This is back when George W. Bush was campaigning for president. And George W.'s response to the question was, well, how old are you? And the student said, I'm 17. And he said, well, in that case, let's move on to the next question. And everybody kind of laughed because he couldn't vote yet. But I'll never forget that moment because I thought that was a tactical mistake. Not that it's not true and funny that the kid can't vote yet, but that by addressing and taking seriously the concerns of young people, we have an opportunity to say your opinion matters and to actually turn their thinking or give them something else to chew on, alternative to maybe what they've been hearing and reading in their circles. And that is an amazing opportunity. So let me set this up for you. Jason says, and again, the article is Why Invest a 22-Year-Old's Tough Questions About Capitalism. And it just came out in the journal just in the last few days, so it was on the 24th. Jason writes, a few days ago, a smart 22-year-old asked me how to invest some savings from her first job. I advised her to open an IRA, an individual retirement account. When she found out she couldn't withdraw it without penalty until she turns 59 and a half, she shot back, quote, well, by then the planet will be a rotating cinder. Then he says, too many young people, or the many young people who seem to share her gloomy view of the future, should read the new book by Lawrence Siegel, Fewer, Richer, Greener. In it, he proclaims, quote, we are on the verge of the greatest democratization of wealth and well-being that the world has ever known. And if he's right, by 2056, when this young investor will turn 59 and a half, billions of people will be wealthier, healthier, happier than ever before. New technologies in energy, food, education, and medicine will heal the planet and enrich human life. The use of fossil fuels will dwindle. Many commodity prices will decline. Frontier markets will boom. This is a fascinating take, isn't it? Because all that you hear, and this is across all media, right and left, are stories about the doom and gloom and the coming apocalypse. Very few people are out there saying, I see good things for the future. And if you're a Christian, this is especially interesting because I think there's a subtle subculture in Christianity, because I grew up in this subculture, that says on the one hand, we are supposed to protect and preserve this earth, that we're stewards of the earth, okay? But on the flip side, there's this kind of implicit understanding that this earth is going to fail no matter what we do, no matter how much we try to protect it. The Bible speaks of this earth being destroyed and there being a new heaven and a new earth. And so even though we are told explicitly be stewards of the earth, there's also kind of this behind the scenes, I think, understanding or at least thought from many Christians. Yeah, but how much does it really matter? I mean, we know in the end this ship is going down, right? And I'm not saying that I actually believe that. I'm saying there is almost this natural tendency to think that way. And I think it's really, therefore, critical that we have voices speaking up and saying, no, there can be good and redemptive and healthy movement here and now. We're not consigned to watching this whole thing go to fire or something like that. And even economically, that there's incredible things happening in the world that people just don't see, that we just don't highlight. And that's what this book does, which makes me want to go read this book. I haven't read it yet. But let me read you some of the questions, because I think they're questions you might have heard from your kids, from your grandkids, or you might have peers that believe this, because again, there's a powerful movement, certainly, that says capitalism is evil. And can it be evil? Sure. It's not evil ideologically, but can people who believe in capitalism, can businesses who adhere to capitalism, can they be evil? Sure, they can do bad and immoral things. But is it, as an ideology, a bad way to go? Well, let me just give you some of the questions that were asked, because I really love these. Okay, the first one she wrote to him was, isn't capitalism destroying the planet and causing massively unfair inequality of wealth? Have you heard this? I've heard this a lot. That the inequality of wealth is only increasing, and that really at its core that goes back to capitalism. Okay? So it's not weird that she would ask. And again, what I like the most about this article is that it doesn't dismiss her concerns. It actually takes them seriously. And I think one of the biggest mistakes that we make as adults talking with younger people, but also just in terms of connecting with people that disagree with us, is that we dismiss their concerns out of hand. We laugh their concerns out. And maybe to our friends and our peers who already agree with us, that strategy works and we all get a good laugh. But in terms of actually having true discourse and achieving any sort of meaningful growth in our relationship with this other person who comes from a different set of beliefs, we've lost that when we dismiss their beliefs out of hand. And this article doesn't do that. So again, the question, isn't capitalism destroying the planet and causing massively unfair inequality of wealth? And the answer is this, that Lawrence gives. For most of the history of the world, almost everyone was poor beyond imagining. Only over the last 250 years, over which capitalism has flourished, have a large number of people in the billions overcome poverty. Remarkably, just in the last year, researchers determined that half the population of the world is already middle class or wealthier. Likewise, historically, the environment has become dirtier as people begin to move up from poverty worldwide. But as they continue to become wealthier, people start to be willing and able to sacrifice some of those gains to get a cleaner environment. As the world gets richer, it will continue to get greener. Switzerland is probably the most environmentally clean country in the world, and it's one of the richest. As time passes, Greece will act more like Switzerland, Colombia more like Greece, Ethiopia more like Colombia, and so on until the world is greener than it is now. Have you heard that answer given? Normally, when I've heard a young person say something about wealth inequality, and isn't capitalism contributing to this, the answer is not, well, let's actually look historically and see the impact of capitalism over the last few hundred years. The answer is simply, no, that's crazy. You'll grow out of it. Here's a thoughtful resource you can go to have an authentic discussion. Next question. Given the history of tobacco companies lying about cancer risk and energy companies denying climate change, why should young people believe that big corporations will take action to improve the environment? That's a great question. That's a great question. Because it's true. We have seen large companies lie and steal and cheat to preserve their business. So why in the world should we believe that companies will act to improve the climate, the environment, the world that we live in, if it's not in their economic best interests? And the answer given? Well, companies already are. Companies are reacting to price signals to become more energy efficient at about 1.5% per year, which compounds pretty quickly to a large decline in energy use over time. Also, over time, the market is a powerful mechanism for driving bad and dishonest providers out of business. All right, that's a fair answer. There are parts of that I think you could push back on. But in its core, capitalism, the idea behind it says that, look, competition works. And if more and more people on Earth are concerned about the environment, companies that choose not to be concerned will face economic consequences. And you might say, well, that's not happening quickly enough. But I will say one thing this article points to that is healthy is that change does not come incredibly quickly. Change is gradual. And yet when you look over any scope of time, longer than 10, 20, 30, 40 years, you see the impact of change. Do we live in a different culture now, a more accepting culture, a more tolerant culture, more progressive culture than we did 50 years ago? Some of you would answer yes to our detriment. But in many ways, many of us would say 100%. The fact that I live in Atlanta, Georgia, and that I can walk around and work with and interact with and eat with and marry and have children with people of different races and ethnicities, and it's not considered deeply abnormal in Atlanta, Georgia, compared to even when I moved to Atlanta in the early 80s, and certainly compared to when my parents would have been here in the 50s and 60s, is remarkably different. But that change has been gradual. And that doesn't, by the way, mean there's not more room for change. It doesn't mean that young people, I mean, this is, I think, critical. We should be applauding not just young people, but I point to them because we see so much of the vocal protests from young people, applauding them for calling out companies that do things that are evil. We should be on the side of idealism in that sense. And yet we shouldn't go so far as to miss the reality of change over time, that there have been and continue to be gradual yet consistent movement. We should applaud that as well. And I think sometimes when you're young, but also when you're idealistic, it's just very easy to miss the progressive movement of change over time that we celebrate. So there is movement towards change here, not in all companies, but across the board. And that movement, as you have more momentum, continues to change. I'm just going to read one more to you. I think these are fascinating. It says, the people who control many major corporations seem to take a very short-term view, maybe a few months at a time. Can they promote the long-term interest? Great question. The answer given, many companies do seem to take a short-term view, just trying to make Wall Street's earnings estimates for the next quarter. But if they were actually wasting resources and sacrificing the long-term value of the company to the goal of maximizing short-term stock prices, Wall Street would figure it out and the stock would go down. There are some travesties relating to executive compensation, product safety, disobedience of laws. But overall, companies are much better managed today with a longer-term view than they were in the past. Believe me, you don't want to go back to the way they were run in the 70s. This is, I think, critical. Young people do not have the context for saying, how was it 30 and 40 and 50 years ago? And there's a strength to that, by the way. There's a strength to young people being able to look at the world somewhat objectively from their viewpoint and say, here are the problems I see today. These problems need to be fixed. That is a beautiful and good thing. And by the way, if you're not a young person, there was a time that you were here, right? There was a time you felt this way. So it's a strength. Just like when I hire somebody new to come work at my company, there is a strength to the fact that they have a fresh set of eyes, that they can walk in and go, man, this is a problem, and this is a problem, and we should move this, we could make this more efficient. That is a strength we should celebrate. The flip side of that is there's also a strength in being able to look back and go, but let me tell you about how things have been changing, how far we have come in 30 and 40 years. There's a meeting in the middle when you do that. And so what young people need, and I'll count myself here sometimes because I'm not in my 60s and I haven't lived through anything near what my parents have lived through. We need to speak our opinions and we need to bring fresh passion and energy to making healthy and good and ethical change. We also need to be tempered by people who can give us context. And that doesn't happen when we dismiss each other. And this isn't just older people, older folks dismissing younger folks. It's also younger folks dismissing older folks. The whole okay boomer thing, which is kind of funny, that became really popular. Okay, boomer. Part of that, however, at its core is a dismissiveness of being able to talk to someone and say, you know what, I respect your age and your wisdom. Give me examples of life. Let me understand what you have seen change so that I can have a better context for my activism as a young person. So I just love this article. Again, a lot of times we talk about this in finances and we talk about how do you talk to your kids about money? How do you talk, and whether your kids are in their teens or their 20s or their 30s? And flip side, how do you talk to your parents about money? If you're in your 30s or 40s and your parents are moving into retirement, how do you have those conversations? This is in a similar vein. Talking about capitalism, talking about the core economic foundation that's made our country great, and not only made our country great, has advanced the world in economic ways that truly, historically, there is no precedent for. Those conversations are vital. Those conversations are our responsibility. And we will never get to meaningful, authentic conversations about this if all we do is dismiss or poke fun at or make fun of. Let's take it seriously and have a real and meaningful conversation where we can learn, and let's be intellectually humble enough to say, even though we've seen a lot, we can probably learn from the passion of these young people, and they need to be intellectually humble enough and honest enough to say, even though I have a clear-eyed view perhaps of some of the injustices going on today, to understand that change has been happening and continues to happen, and that is what creates growth in all of us over time. So I just encourage you, if you're struggling with this because you have family in this position, or you have a child or a grandchild or a friend, or you're a teacher, or you're, you know, a pastor, you're in a profession where you work with people cross-generationally, this is a great article to read. And I encourage you to read the book. I haven't read the book yet, but I'd like to as well, because I think it's for once points to what are the good things that are happening. What are things we can celebrate? Is there hope for the future besides just, again, you know, some sort of burning abyss of global warming and death, which is what so many young people feel? And we've seen that this year. So check this article out again one more time from Jason Zweig, Why Invest? A 22-Year-Old's Tough Questions About Capitalism. We shouldn't be scared to have this conversation, friends. We shouldn't be worried in some way. We shouldn't be, honestly, so many of us just get annoyed that the questions are being asked and we forget that we ask the same questions. It's an opportunity to talk about the things we truly believe. Why is it that this system we live in is the greatest economic system in the history of the world? look at all the good that's been done. And you can participate in it. And you can help right the inevitable wrongs that come along with any system. It's a worthwhile read. You should check it out. All right, I want to answer a few more questions that have been sent in just so we can get to as many as possible. But I just, again, strongly encourage anything Jason Zweig writes. I love, but that was a fantastic article because it's so practical. You can take it. You can use it. Just Google the article, and I strongly recommend checking it out. Okay, so we had a question from Richard. Richard says, I just moved into a job that offers both a regular 401k and a Roth option. Which one would you normally recommend? Richard, it totally depends on your tax situation. So if you're someone who owes a lot of taxes right now, every year you have to pay a lot of money to the government, then a regular 401k is beautiful because it's pre-tax, meaning that you can take that money, you put it into this account, it's going to grow tax deferred, but in that year that you put the money into the 401k, you're getting a write-off on your taxes. And so you're getting a tax deduction, which can be huge if you owe money every year, okay? On the flip side, if you're someone who's getting a big refund every year, then you go with the Roth. A Roth, in general, a Roth is an after-tax vehicle, which means you pay taxes this year on the money that goes into the account, but then it grows tax-free forever. You take it out tax-free in retirement. And so I love Roths because we don't know how the world's going to change. We have no idea what the government's going to do with tax rates once we're in retirement. But Roths kind of protect us from that because we've already paid the tax on them. Ideally, you'd like to enter retirement with a little bit of both. You'd like to enter retirement having some balance here where you have some money that's pre-tax and some money that's already been taxed. It's after-tax, tax-free. So I don't have one that I prefer per se. It's more based on your situation and your current tax situation. Richard, thanks for calling, for writing in. Next is from Natisha. Natisha writes, if your company has a match on a 401k, if you have to call out, do you still get the match? I'm fully vested. That's a great question. So in other words, if you're getting a match on your 401k, you're contributing to your 401k, but you have to be out, I'm assuming she means because of sickness or short-term disability or something like that, do you still get the amount, the match? If you're contributing, you get a match. Most companies, the way they do this is every paycheck that you have money coming out, going into a 401k, they're matching. And if that money is vested, then yeah, it's yours. It's vested. If you have to leave a company for an extended period of time and they stop paying you, so let's say that you have a short-term disability and your paycheck stops for a period of time, you don't lose your job, but the paycheck stops, and when the paycheck stops, you stop contributing because of that for a period of time, then you probably aren't going to get the match if you're not getting paid. So it's really more tied to, are you receiving a paycheck and deferring money out of it? As long as you're deferring money out of a paycheck and it's getting matched, you're good to go. Okay, good question. Don asks, I'm looking for a financial advisor that's fee-based with no compensation tied to the product that they recommend. How can I be sure that's what I'm getting when I sit down with an advisor? It's a great question, Don. The language here really matters. Anybody that says they are fee-based, anybody that says they're a financial advisor, there's a good probability they also sell commissioned products. If they're fee-only or the financial planner, then that tends to point towards that they don't do commissioned products. The easiest way to ask this is just actually asking. So on that first meeting, when someone comes into our office for an initial discussion with us, they don't leave without knowing exactly how we get paid, and also knowing exactly whether we receive commissions or not. And in our case, we are fee only, so we don't do any commissioned products. We explain to people our entire process, and then we explain exactly how we get paid so there's no confusion. They pay a fee up front for planning, and if they want us to manage their investments, it's a flat fee for that. So ask, because people don't normally ask, and then when you don't ask, you come back and you're surprised. Most advisory companies, most financial advisors, quote-unquote, both get commissions and do some fee-based or fee work, right? They kind of do both. And that can be dangerous only because you don't know sometimes when you're buying something from them, is this something you're getting a commission for, which might change the way that you approach it, versus is this something you just get a flat fee for. So just ask the question. That's all the time we have for today. Hey, if you don't get our daily update, let me just recommend to you, jump on the website. It's dynamicmoney.com. You can get our daily update, and it's kind of like a one-minute version of this show where you learn everything that's going on that day in the world, and you can get it again straight to your inbox by just going to dynamicmoney.com. Friends, so happy you could join us, and I hope you have a great rest of the week.